good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren Donnie Can Chase on this rainy day. No, it's snowy. Actually, snowy slash wet.
Slushy?
Slushy is a good word.
Gross. Sludgy.
It is gross. There's another good word. And I think it's going to be like this for a lot of the day. So I didn't think the roads were bad, though. So
no,
be
fine.
Careful anyway. But, you know, I think you should be fine. Darren McFarland, that's me, Willie Dunnick.
Oh.
That's him for a while. And then he'll go to Deep Dish Pizza City. Chi-town. Chicago.
The Bears.
Blackhawks tomorrow night, United Center. Hope you don't hear that damn song. The last two times I was there. I didn't hear it once. It was great. It was great. Chase McAbabe.
Hello.
That's him.
Good morning.
Elijah Campbell behind the glass. We've got a great show for you. If we didn't, we wouldn't tell you anyway. So it's always going to be a great show.
They're always great.
Tony Delk. He's pretty good at basketball. He's going to join us at 10:15. Looking forward to that. We'll tell you an honor for him in this state and in our city. We'll tell you about that coming up at 10:15 and talk a little SEC basketball with him. Bucky Brooks from the NFL Network at hour number two. Alan Bell will stop by from 24/7 Sports and CBS in the third hour, and Elliot Friedman, his weekly chat with us, coming up at 1 o'clock. Chase, you were a part of Smashville Live last night in Cool Springs. How did it go?
Oh, it was good. It was awesome. Craig Smith, Austin Watson, Hal Gill. We had a good time and telling old stories. You know, what's funny is we're around this team so much and have been for the last several years that things kind of run together. And I forgot Hal actually played with Craig and Austin. So we talked about Hal Gill and if he was, you know, always the same, and they confirmed that he was. So that was fun, told stories. Austin Watson, you know, talked openly about, you know, his journey and everything that he's gone through over the past year. And so that was cool and just got into a lot of different things on and off the ice. So appreciate everybody for coming out to Brew House South in Cool Springs and to Craig Smith and Austin Watson for being the special guests.
As we said, those are good dudes. So
yeah,
makes it for an easy show.
It does. And you know, that's I think people don't always know that, you know, behind the scenes relationships do get formed because you're around these guys so much, and so that's what makes it easy to do shows like that. And so I appreciate those guys, and it was fun and laid back, and the hour flew by as it usually does. But good crowd too, so that was cool. And, Willie, I know you have it next week with Philip Forsberg and Callie Yarncroke at Boom Boz in East Nashville on the east side.
Oh, get to walk
the east side. So that'll be good.
That'll be good.
Out of perspective. Good stuff. Greg Robinson, it's not good to be him. You guys seen this?
Mm-hmm.
He's in jail in Texas. Apparently, you cannot carry around 157 pounds of marijuana.
That is not good.
In a rented vehicle.
That is frowned upon.
With two other people. Apparently, you cannot do that. I'm just reading the story. I didn't know that. Haven't tried that. But, he's in the big house. And if he gets convicted, he's going to be in the big house for a while. Like, his career is over. Intent to sell?
Yeah, not good. You have that much. You got an intent to do something.
How would they make that connection?
I don't know. How do they know? Did he tell them? How do they know that?
How do they know?
Well, I think
he really wanted to sell that.
I could be wrong. I am not.
Distribution? What? 157
pounds? Is it the lie detector? Do you intend to sell that? No, I don't intend to sell this at all.
I'm satisfied.
Are you sure? Are you sure?
I'm satisfied.
Yeah.
I mean, what a dope he is.
What a great choice of words by you. I don't even think
that was intended.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't even know if you meant to do that, but it was good.
Somebody roll up Greg Robinson and smoke him. What a dope. Good Lord. First round pick by Jeff Fisher and the Rams. I don't want to say a bust. What was he taking, like fifth overall or something? He was at Auburn. He hasn't lived up to it.
You kind of put him in the same category as Corey Davis, just not living up to where they were drafted. Right. A good player, but not where they were drafted.
But I was in Cleveland for that first game against the Titans. He's a knucklehead.
Yeah.
He's not good. I said it. Remember when I came back, I was like, they got problems. Their left tackle's not good. I said that the Monday coming back from that game. And now he's in an El Paso jail.
El Paso.
Yeah.
What a donkey.
Well, to turn this into a football conversation, just for this thought, with him now probably not being available for the Browns, what does that do for somebody like Jack Conklin? Because I asked him the question of, you know, when
you asked Jack?
I asked, no, not about this, but I asked Jack the question of, okay, if you know you hit the free agent market, what if you're looked at as a left tackle? You played left tackle in college, and I do think there are some teams that might look at him that he's not going to get the payday necessarily right away, but
what are you basing that off of? Like, have you talked to teams you think that they...
No, but, I mean, he's played right tackle, and that's what he said. I'm using his words.
Right, but
his...
you just said that you think that there are teams that may view him as a left tackle. What is that based off of? Just your opinion?
My opinion, that he played that position in college, and that's why I asked him about that, because remember when he first came here, there was that question.
Oh, I remember well.
Well, does he play the left side or the right side? And well, Taylor Lewan comes out, I'm a left tackle, mm-hmm. and there was all of that. So... that's where I went. You know, that's why I got to that.
No, argument. It was a good question. But you just said that you think teams may be viewing him as a left tackle, and I was just curious why you were saying that.
Yeah, that's my opinion. I'm asking that question. I'm not saying necessarily that they would.
Well,
if
somebody brings him in to be a left tackle, he'll get paid like a left tackle.
Yeah.
They won't say, hey, we're going to pay you less and you have to prove it, but we're going to put you at left tackle. He's going to get paid.
So
like
if you're the Browns, you know he's available, and you know what kind of career he's had so far and what he did in college, do you consider bringing him in and be like, hey, we're going to put you on the left side?
Honestly, I think they will be considering him whether he's on the left or the right.
Yeah.
Like, they need help offensive line, big time. And, by the way, he's gone.
Yeah. Oh,
Greg Robinson's out of the picture.
Right.
Even if all this gets cleared up, he's gone. I mean, they're going to move on from him.
I think the more you think about it and the more you read about this stuff, you see that there is a lot of leverage that Jack Conklin has. So if they can strike a deal with either Tannehill or Henry, and I think it's much more likely you could find some deal with Tannehill, you use one of the tags to protect Conklin, right? Give yourself more time if that's how you want to go.
That
was the Bill Barnwell theory, right? That's what he put out there is,
Work
a deal with Tannehill,
sure.
Then use either the franchise tag or the transition tag. One of them on Henry, one of them on
Conklin. I think in his article he said franchise Henry, transition Conklin, and he even went on to say re-sign Logan Ryan. So he, in his scenario, you have all four back for next year. Which, look, we've said.
And he also mentioned cutting some guys.
Yeah.
And the guys we've been mentioning.
Deion Lewis, Laney Walker, Cam Wake. Were the three that he mentioned that you could clear up about, I think he estimated $15 to $16 million in cap space if you do that. Which if you cut all three of those guys and you clear up that space, then under that scenario, you can probably, you know, you probably can get all four of those guys back.
I think it's very unrealistic.
I do too. Because
I think honestly, Jack Conklin's going to get, unless they do what Willie just threw out there, he's going to get overwhelmed by somebody. Somebody's going to overpay for him. They just will. It only takes one team to say, we'll give you $15 million.
Right, and that's why I bring up the Cleveland Browns with this whole situation. I mean, you know, look, it's obviously a bad situation. Shouldn't have that much weed on you. It's bad for Greg Robinson, but if you're Jack Conklin, I think you call your agent and you go, all right, well, that's a team that's going to be really needing a tackle.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, so that's why I said, to answer your question, to me it's whether it's left or right. I think they will definitely be a team interested in the services of Jack Conklin.
And we had Teron, because Teron was standing next to me when I asked the question, and he pulled me aside afterwards and said, that is a really good question because nobody has really thought about it that way. And I'm not saying teams are going to look at him necessarily as a left tackle, but he's played the position and he's certainly capable of it. So I think it opens the market up even more for him of if he's that versatile of, okay, put it in. You know, Jack gave the right answer. He goes, well, I've played right tackle in the NFL, so that's probably how I'm viewed, you know, as. But I do think it could be interesting when he hits the open market if it gets that far, which I think it probably will.
Probably so. We'll come back. Tony Delk. He was really good at Kentucky. In fact, he's the all-time leading scorer in school history. I don't know how many people know that, but he was fantastic in the day.
All-time leading scorer?
I think so.
More than like Dan Issel and those guys?
Yeah, I think so.
Let's look that up.
I haven't looked it up.
I didn't know that.
I just felt like that felt good to me.
That felt good to you?
That felt like I was providing the right, but I will say it ends with a question mark, period.
Okay. Well, let's look it up.
I think he is. I really do. I feel pretty good about that.
So if you were listening to a radio show.
I'm going to lock it in right now. I'm locking it in. Yeah.
Final
answer. In fact, I'm wagering all my money.
Final answer.
Final Jeopardy question. I'm wagering it all.
Okay. All right. Let's take a look and see.
We will look during the break.
Look.
We'll come back. Tony Delk next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Number one. Well, dang it. We're back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this rainy, snowy day here in Nashville. But I've freaking lost all my money in Final Jeopardy.
Yeah, and I think I overtook you because I got the answer.
You did. Dang it. I thought for sure Tony Delk was the all-time leading scorer in Kentucky basketball history. Tony, I locked in that answer, and I lost. Dang it. I really thought you were the all-time leading scorer. You were fifth. No shame in fifth.
Top five for Kentucky.
Five
that's
Kentucky.
That's a lot of history right there.
They've kind of pumped out some pretty good basketball players
over
the years.
They've had some pretty good players.
Not bad, man. Not bad. For what I did in the years that I was there. And I think sometimes people forget that, you know, even as a freshman, I didn't play a lot as a freshman. So if I could have got, you know, that all those games under my belt, who knows where I could have ended up.
You know, that's a good point, Tony. Maybe that's what I was thinking about. That lack of playing time. You deserved more when you were a freshman. What was your best memory?
I think my best memory would probably be just winning the championship game as a senior, you know, getting a chance to cut down the nets and just all the work that was spent and all the years that was there. And then when you finally become a senior and your last collegiate game, you win it and you become a national champion. That's something that can never be taken away.
No doubt about it. When you look around, well, actually, let's just start with Kentucky. Tony Delk on the line with us. Also going to tell you a good honor, a great honor by you. We'll get to in a moment. But this Kentucky team, under John Calipari, they kind of do this every year. They kind of have the same footprint. They're going to start off a little slow, a little sluggish with all those young guys, and you're going to be like,
right.
I don't know how good they are. And then by January, they get into conference play, and it's like, oh, okay, they're getting a whole lot better. And then by this time, as they're winding down the regular season, getting ready for the SEC tournament and the NCAA tournament, they're hitting on all cylinders, and they seem like they're doing that again this year.
Yeah, you got to look at, you know, returning players. I mean, they make a huge difference with, you know, Quickly coming back, Richards coming back, you know, those guys just alone, just the confidence they play with. Even Hagans, you know, just getting another year on your belt doesn't hurt collegiate players. I know everyone wants to be a one and done, and they might believe they're one and done when they leave high school, but there's so many things you have to learn on the defensive side of basketball, as well as, you know, being an efficient offensive player, playing with other good guys where the ball is not primarily, or you don't dominate the ball like you once did in high school. You have to share that wealth, and it takes younger players, you know, a few months to understand, you know, now I'm on a better team. I have really good players, and these players were the best players at their high school and their state respectively. And once you get to that point, now it's kind of see what kind of chemistry can we have once we step on the court. I really like how Coach Cal teams gel, especially the second half of the season.
Talking to Tony Delk, one of the all-time greats at Kentucky. Tony, I want to ask you, you played at a time where players were just starting to notice that, hey, you know, maybe it is time for me to go to the pros after my freshman year, my sophomore year. It was just starting to change the way we expect to see it today. We're talking about Kentucky. I've always wondered what it's like for Kentucky fans to, like players like yourself and a lot of players that you played with, they got to watch you guys grow up. You mentioned your freshman year. You played on a great team. But you were more of a role player, and then by the end of your career, you are the focal point of a tremendous team, one of the great teams in college basketball history. But Just talk about maybe the four-year experience at Kentucky as opposed to what we see now today where there's so much transition coming and going.
Well, I think when you're able to stay somewhere for a number of years, it's like being a part of a company. Like, you get better. I think when you're younger, you know, you get more experience. You understand what you're good at, your coaching staff, you know, they know exactly your strengths and your weaknesses, and you grow as individuals. And I think when, you know, getting an opportunity to be there for 4 years, you have Walter Cardi, Antoine Early State, Tua Run, you know, those guys came in, you know, we were seniors, we were guys who could lead our team, and we had leadership capability. And you can't really be a leader. Like, some of it's naturally inside of guys, but I think as you stay in the program for a couple of years, you understand the leadership qualities that are respected. Well, actually not respected, but I think when you have a leadership quality, and I think that's a trust factor when someone has been in my program for 3 or 4 years, they know my system, and they can actually lead the other guys that are on the court. So that was a luxury that we had, and you know, it's so unnatural now. You know, I think more of the mid-major school have, you know, better leadership because those guys actually stayed for a couple of years, and coaches can trust those guys more so than a one-year guy.
You played for a coach that was very progressive with the game, you know, using the three-point shot, high tempo, high-pressure defense. What, when you watch the college game today with the 30-second shot clock, now the three-point line's back a little bit further, you have, as you said, you have less teams that have been together for 2 or 3 years, especially at the major conference level here. So what about when you watch the game today, what's your enjoyment level? What do you like? What do you not like as opposed to your era?
Well, I think I came in an era where there was more physicality. You know, guys are fouling a lot harder. There's a lot more hand-checking. And, you know, even as we pressed teams, you know, we got away with a lot of fouls, you know, which also played in our favor. It helps – it sped the game up a little bit. But, you know, even watching the game now, what I enjoy most about it is there's so many versatile players. You know, there's multiple ball handlers. You know, when we were pressing, most coaches primarily depending on their point guard to bring the ball down the court. And, you know, if we could throw 3 or 4 bodies at him and wear him down, that now you'll have another guy who can distribute the ball. The way the game is now, 1 through 5, all 5 guys, you know, can almost put the ball on the floor and make plays. So just the playmaking ability of where the game is at now is something that I definitely admire and I really enjoy watching.
Well, that's a good point. And, by the way, it helps to have 9 or 10 guys that you guys always had, right? You had some fouls to give.
Yes, we did. We had a lot of fouls to give. And also what we knew was that they can't call every foul. You know what I'm saying? Like, if they want the game to progress, and also they want the game to keep, you know, keep the flow of the game going. And if you called every foul, and we called a foul like every possession foul, there was a foul. You know, I think that gave it to the aggressive team or the who showed aggression on the court. And we always, from start to finish, we showed aggression.
Boy, that is absolutely true. What about this part of it, Tony? I wonder how your game would have been in this type of game where you have the three-point line's a little further back. You see so many teams now that really don't even have anybody try to post up in most possessions,
right?
Because everybody can shoot. They're more skilled. Like you said, all the guys are more apt to be able to put the ball on the floor. You keep those driving lanes open. What do you think it would have done to your game to play in this type of style?
I think if we're thinking about even, and it's not even about the money, I just think my game was tailor-made for this era as well as it was for any era, because I kind of like did a little bit of everything. I had a post game. You know, I had a nice mid-range game. I could put the ball on the floor. I could shoot the three from deep going back to high school where, you know, I had the freedom to take a shot from 27, 28 feet out. And that was how I played high school basketball. And just getting the opportunity that all these guys are getting right now to show your playmaking ability, and plus the way the game is, you can't really put your hands on anyone. So if you can shoot from 27, 25 to 28 feet out, it gives you more driving room. So now the lanes open up even more, and you don't have big men. When I came into the NBA and even college basketball, like, you know, you had your power forward and center. Those guys clogged up the lane, so you had nowhere to go. So you had to throw the ball inside to them and wait for them to make their move. And I thought the game was slower. But where the game is at now, especially for guys who can put the ball on the floor to the 6'2", to the 6'10", 6'11 guys is it opens up the floor, and I think the fans are enjoying just the, you know, just the excitement that it brings when you can have so many different guys that can bring the ball down the floor and not just rely on that one guy to come back and just be a facilitator.
We're talking to Tony Delk, former Kentucky guard, and we've got a little news to pass on that Chase is going to have for you here in a moment. I want to ask you one more, Tony. I played at Vanderbilt right before you got there, and so Rick Pitino had just come into the league, so I'm used to how you guys played. Then, as I'm moving out, here comes Arkansas into the league, and I become an announcer. And one of the games I'll never forget, in the Georgia Dome, SEC tournament, you guys against Arkansas, the place, I don't know how many it held, but whatever it held, that's how many people were there, and it was about 50-50 right. Crowd-wise. That's one of the most exciting games that I can remember. When you guys would play Arkansas in the SEC tournament, that's got to be up there with any college atmosphere that there is.
Yeah, it was, because you know we play similar styles. I mean, I don't think we press each other, you know, a great deal, whether we played in regular season or in the postseason. And I think it was exciting because, you know, it was up-tempo. Like, you knew it was going to be a high-octane game where both teams were in transition, running, shooting three, you know, just throwing the ball inside and getting steals and going out and, you know, not really running a whole lot of plays, just really playing on athleticism and instinct. And, you know, when it came down to my high school decision on which school to go to, it came down to Arkansas, Kentucky, and I just thought I had a Billy Donovan had built a close relationship with me than probably the Arkansas program, which at that time was, you know, a really good program run by a great coach at Nolan Richardson. They had great talent. Mike Anderson was their lead assistant, and it was so close, you know, because my parents, my mom wanted me to go to Arkansas. My brother wanted me to go to Kentucky. So it was a tough decision for me, and I don't think I would have done bad going to either school, but I think Kentucky tradition has served me well after my playing career.
We're talking to Tony Delk. He is a Kentucky basketball legend, but also soon to be a Tennessee Sports Hall of Famer. It was announced yesterday that you went to Haywood High School, of course, but you'll be in the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame this year. What does that mean to you to have now a Hall of Famer as a part of your title?
You know, I am thrilled. I mean, I can't say it really hasn't sunk in yet. I guess, you know, as it gets closer to the day where I'm going to be one of the inductees with so many other great players, you know, I think it'll finally sink in. But it's more for the people who helped me, my brothers Leslie, David, Ricky, having great parents, you know, Florence and Leslie Duff, my savior up above, and then just the town of Brownsville, Tennessee. I mean, that community supported me in every step of the way. And then I had great high school teammates, Bronte Shaw, Kendall Dancy, who was was kind of like my friend that on every level. We worked together. Tyrone Hines, the late great Joseph Cooper, who was a guy that sacrificed so much for me. We had just a lot of Grover Harwell, who was my point guard, and then Coach Sullivan, you know, who allowed me the freedom just to go out there and play basketball and not look over my shoulder. You know, he gave me the green light, and with that green light, you know, I took full advantage of it. But if you don't have good teammates and guys who are unselfish that want to see you succeed, then, you know, you're not going to get anywhere in life. And I had a bunch of great teammates that I really enjoyed playing with.
What was the transition like for you? Because I've been to Brownsville. There's not much there, and to go to Lexington, to a big program like Kentucky, and I know Lexington's not a big town by any means, but the transition of going from Haywood to Kentucky, what was that like?
It was, like I said, it was definitely a transition. I think that's one of the reasons why I struggled my first year in Lexington, because maybe the city was too big. It wasn't basketball. The basketball field was going to be basketball. I just thought that, you know, coming from a small town, that community embraced what I did, and I knew everyone there. You know, it was a home feeling. And then when you leave a place that, you know, you've been there your whole life, and then it's like, okay, you got to go start over again in a different city you don't know. You don't know your teammates that well. You're trying to learn the coaching staff. It was a major adjustment, and it took me probably about a year and a half to get used to being in Lexington. And I think when my freshman season ended, I stayed there for the summer, and, you know, it helped with understanding of what was expected out of me, but also I knew I had to work a lot harder, because just because you're a dominant player in high school, when you get to the collegiate level, you know, those guys are just as good. You know, I had a senior that was in front of me, and he wasn't going to let a freshman come in and take his starting position and get his playing time. And I think when I was a sophomore, junior, senior, I started every game. So it was not really something negative about my game. It was that, you know, you really have to learn how to play at this level, and each level presents a different challenge, and I was always up for the challenge.
Tony, it's a cool honor. The Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame is right here in our city in Nashville, and they haven't released the date yet on that ceremony. Congratulations on getting in, and thanks for doing this.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me on.
All right, that is Tony Delk, former Kentucky legend, fifth all-time leading scorer.
Number one?
Dan Issel.
Who got it?
Dang it.
Hey, but you know what?
You won Final Jeopardy.
I respect you.
I got it.
You stuck to your guns. You didn't flip-flop.
You were sure.
Yeah.
All right, now.
Skywalker, number two.
Kenny Skywalker. You know, they were showing.
Jack Goose Givens, three.
Goose Givens, 41 in the championship game, 78. And then you said Bogans is fourth?
Mm-hmm. Keith Bogans, I would have never.
I never would have thought he had more than Tony Delk, because I had a feeling Tony Delk played 4 years. As he mentioned, his first year.
33 more points.
So Tony Delk, 92-93, that was the year that Vanderbilt edged Kentucky for the regular season championship. That was an excellent Kentucky team that made it to the Final Four. Tony Delk came off the bench there. Then 94 and 95 were very good Kentucky teams that came up a little bit short. 96, they had the absolutely loaded team with Ron Mercer as a freshman. They had Derek Anderson. They had Walter McCarty. They had Delk. They had Mark Pope. They literally went
96 team.
They had Nazee Muhammad was like the 12th man who never played, yeah, right, until the next year. Like, he never got in the game. He was a long time NBA player. I'm trying to think of some other guys. Who else would have been on?
Well,
that
they
team?
Went to three straight national. That was the start of the run of three straight national championships, right? That year, then they lost to Arizona
in 95.
95 is when they won.
No, 96 is when they won. That was Tony Delk's senior year. The year before is when they lost to Jerry Stackhouse and Rasheed Wallace in Birmingham, which I went to the game, in the regional final, in the Final Eight. Disappointing loss for Kentucky, but that was a really good North Carolina team that went to the Final Four instead.
But after they Tony Delk's freshman year when they won, they lost to Miles Bibby, Simon and Bibby in Arizona, yeah, in overtime. The next year, and then they won with Tubby Smith's first year against,
right,
Utah,
correct,
98,
with Keith Van Horn.
Did you view Tubby's championship as that was really Patino's?
No, I don't do that. No,
you're not one of those people.
No, because
I am not one of those.
Still
people.
Have to coach. I mean, you still have, yeah, to. You can't just show up and like, hey, okay, well, I'm here. I'm just a warm body. I mean, you still have to coach them.
See, I'm one.
He did a great job with those guys. That was, yeah, that team was not nearly as loaded as the 96 team, and maybe even the 97 team. Now, the 97 team didn't have Delk. It didn't have, I don't think it had Walter McCarty. You were down to Derek Anderson and Ron Mercer as the key 1-2 punch. Still had a lot of great players on the team. That's when those guys stayed 2 or 3 years. Ron Mercer stayed 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even the best, in most cases, would stay at least 2.
Was Tayshaun Prince on that team? Was he later?
He was a little later. He was a Tubby. He was a few years later, I think.
Mm-hmm. Tayshaun Prince.
I don't think he was 98.
His top 10 scorer all time. The good news for all those guys is, as long as Calipari's at Kentucky, nobody will ever worry about getting past.
Nobody's staying 4 years. No, Dan Issel's record is safe.
Everybody's record is safe. Because if you're good, you're gone after 1 year. All right, we'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You want to hit the road with the Preds? They'll be in Columbus on Saturday, March 14th. ESPN 102.5 The Game will be there as well. Blue Jackets and Predators, March 14th, Nationwide Arena. Tickets are on sale now. You can purchase tickets at visitthegamenashville.com. The trip is going to be organized by simplyafan.com. For upcoming sports adventures, you can go to that website and look, and the transportation will be provided by Gray Line of Tennessee. So it'll be another fun trip. Chase, you'll be on that trip.
Yes, I will. Very excited about it. Again, as you said, thegamenashville.com. You can get tickets. It's an overnight trip. There's a hotel room, tickets to the game. We're all going to be in one big section trying to take that thing over, and hopefully we don't hear any cannons. They'll come out. There's one cannon. That's the only cannon that we want to hear. But as the Preds make their run to the playoffs, I think it'd be a fun trip. And I know you've been to that arena before. Obviously, Willie, you will be there as well. But should be a lot of fun. So go to thegamenashville.com. Get some tickets. Sign up. Join us.
Should do that. Like right now.
Do it.
What did you guys make of the news that came out yesterday after our show that maybe expanding the playoffs and expanding the regular season by a game in the NFL?
In the National Football League?
Mm-hmm.
I'm staying consistent. I don't like it. I think 16 games is the absolute most you can ask of these guys. I understand the money situation, but
they're taking a preseason game away. Wow.
It's not the same.
Mind-blowing. They're going to take a preseason game away.
Yeah. Whew. What a concept.
Man. Maybe they should take two away.
This is another thing that bugs me. Adding an extra wild card. A lot of years, it would let a team in that has no business being in the playoffs, right? Like the Steelers would have been the next team in. They were on fumes. They had nothing. A, they were ravaged by injuries. So they have that issue. And B, they weren't very, by the end of the year, they weren't a very good team.
But how can you say that? The Titans were the last in and they got to the AFC Championship game.
Well, they wouldn't have been the last in this format.
Right, but in this scenario, they were the last team in, and they got
right. It's different years. Like in the NFC, the Rams would have gotten in, and they
last year the Titans have gotten in, even with a loss to the Colts. Is that what you're saying? You're talking about this year? I thought.
I'm saying if the Titans if they added a wild card to this format. Now, I mean, in theory, you'd have to play another game, right? You'd have 17.
Right.
You played 17 games, so your record would be 9-8. But I think you would increase the chances of a team getting it at 8-9 a lot of times, depending on the season and the balance between the two conferences. So I don't like it.
This is what I'm asking, because when you say last year, you mean 2019, not 2018, because I mean 2018.
Yeah, right. You're talking about the year when they lost here, when Mariota didn't play the final game and they lost to the Colts. It was never a game.
In the four straight years of 9-7, they made the playoffs twice. I'm curious it doesn't matter. But
I hear what you're saying, Willie, and you're right, okay? The bottom line is you're right, but there's a but. The reality is it doesn't matter. They don't care because guess what? It doesn't matter if you're 8-9 and you get in. You know what people are going to do? They're going to watch. They just will.
Well, that's
it's
not
a deterrent for anything.
Then why not let everybody in?
So they're
going to
make more money, and the players are going to make more money. They will get the ratings. Everybody will watch, and whether it's an 8-9 team or a 10-8 team.
Well, then why not let eight teams in for each conference and have a big tournament like they did the strike year? There is a limit.
Hey, don't say that. That they may be discussing that.
I mean, why not? Why not let all 32 teams in?
It may get to that someday.
You know, have an NCAA tournament.
Don't
play two games a week.
Don't say that. Don't be careful what you wish for.
You're making my point for me. There's only so much you can ask these guys to do after the physical punishment that you take. It's going to hurt the quality of what you're seeing. I don't like it. I'm sticking to my guns.
Yeah. That's weird. You usually like change. You usually embrace it. That's odd that you don't like change.
I don't love it, but you know, I'm not going to be one of those people that says I think it waters down the product, because I don't think it will. To your point, Darren, everybody's going to watch. Everybody will get used to it, and then this conversation will be moot, you know, within a year of them doing it. I kind of wish they'd go one or the other. You know, if you do the 17th game, then just have that. Keep the playoffs as they are. I like the playoff format. I like that you have the top two seeds get byes, but you know, I So I don't love it, but I'll probably get used to it like everything else.
Of course you will. And you'll watch.
And I'll watch.
Just like everybody else.
And then as it, you know, as everybody gets used to the format, as the teams and all that, it'll create more strategy. One thing I heard Robbie bring up this morning that thought was interesting, the final week of the season could be a little more meaningful because you're fighting for one bye or you're fighting for that extra playoff spot. So it could make the last week of the regular season be a little more interesting than, and you're not having as many teams having to sit guys and stuff like that. So, look, the NFL does things for money, and that's exactly what this is. It's more money for the players, more money for the owners. That's ultimately why they're going to do it, but everybody's going to watch. So.
Well, let's just be perfectly clear. Let's not bang on the NFL for doing things for money. Everybody does.
Yeah.
Well, everything for money.
I wasn't banging on them at all.
Yeah. I'm just saying everybody does everything for money.
I do stuff for money.
Right. I mean, so it's not just the NFL, like, oh, they're just trying to make another buck. Well, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. $10 billion won't be enough per year. $15 billion won't be enough per year. It'll never be enough. They'll always be looking to make another buck. Could you imagine if Willie was in charge of, like, advancement for our culture, our livelihood? Like, if he was the guy responsible. Like, think about how big our TVs would still be today. Like, they would be, like, 6 feet wide.
No flat panels?
Because Willie would be like, HD, no need for that. Let's just keep this 400-pound television in my living room. I'm used to it. Let's keep it.
What kind of
Blockbuster is just fine, guys. I got a page from them just now. I'm going to the payphone, and I'm going to call Blockbuster. It is not due today. My movie is due on Friday. So I'm calling Blockbuster today. And I'm telling them my movie is not due until Friday when I have to return it back to the store and show them my membership card.
Don't forget to rewind.
Which I'm very comfortable with.
Don't forget to rewind,
Willie. That's what I've been doing, and that's what I'm going to keep doing, and you're going to do it too.
Have your fun. There's a difference between...
What kind of trash cans have in dugouts, Willie?
There's a difference between...
Look, I've been used to 7 miles a gallon... My whole life since I've been driving, since I was 16. So I don't really see a need.
This voice is
to get better gas mileage. It's just ridiculous. There's no need to change anything.
The voice kind of sounds like Jim Carrey doing the Grinch.
I was going to say somebody else, but now hold on a second.
Our microwaves would still be 7 feet wide. Willie's like, I can put the Thanksgiving turkey in the microwave. We don't need to change the microwaves. Okay? They're just fine the way we can cook an entire meal in my microwave. There's no reason to explore anything smaller. It's ridiculous. I'm used to this microwave. You can get used to it, too.
Are you finished with this?
I'm done. I'm running out of examples.
Yeah. That's good.
There's
proud
a difference
you.
Between innovation, which is what you're talking about with, you know, your old guy voice, and sometimes less is more. Sometimes your product is better by not adding to it. It's got nothing to do with, like, evolving and, you know, make, you know, technological advances. It's just what's best for your players, what's best for the game itself. I just think the game is better with it now. 16, I just don't like going past 16. I'm not alone with this, by the way.
Which Predators jersey would you have not gone away from? The 98 jerseys or the mustards? Which one would we still have if you were in charge? Or would it be the blue ones?
No, we would never have
would it
the
be
mustards.
The blue ones? Or I'm wondering, would you still be white at home, or would you have advanced to mustard?
No,
would
I don't
you
think,
maybe
I,
have stopped at the blue ones?
I think the mustard's too cutting edge for him. I think
you're right.
I think go with the white.
I think he would
white
be
at
like,
home and
whoa,
the blue on the road.
Let's whoa.
We'd still have the old scoreboard, no
what
fang
is
vision.
This thing?
No fang vision.
Let's stick with white at home. That's tradition. It's traditional.
Willie's like, can I go to Chicago?
We'll go colored jerseys, get a little color in them on the road. I'm comfortable with that. Let's just do that.
There's something to be said sometimes for tradition, right? There's some admiration that people have for the Yankees uniforms, even though I hate the Yankees. But if you look at a Yankee uniform today, it's the same as the Yankee uniform in 1980. It's the same as the Yankee uniform in 1970, 1960, and on back. The road uniform, pretty much the same thing. So you get a benefit.
Would you have names on jerseys, or are you against that?
I think it's fine. I'm just saying you give and, it's a give and take. Like Penn State's football uniforms, Alabama's football uniforms, they're going to look the same. They're not coming out in black, Alabama.
Well, the Yankees have a swoosh on them now because Nike, you know, the swoosh is on it.
You would have never been hired at Oregon. I can tell you that.
No, no.
Never.
But each entity has to decide how they want to do it. Oregon is fine. I like a lot about
no, you
what
would
they
never
do.
Have been hired.
No, I'm all right with that. It's out of
Did
control.
Did you see what he was
like
wearing yesterday?
Uniform,
he had a highlighter shirt on. I think he did. Willie did.
I know. Well, that's it's been around a while.
He likes the highlighter yellow or green or whatever.
He got that at Service Merchandise. So he still likes
They have neon stuff at Service Merchandise?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Service Merchandise.
Did you buy that the same day that somebody else we know bought his shirts that he still wears?
Why don't they ever go back and get the products and send them down the, what was it, the Service Merchandise? Yeah. Send it down the belt or whatever. Yeah. You wait for it. Those guys behind the glass, they're like, huh? I've never heard of that. All right, we'll come back. Wrap up the first hour next. Bucky Brooks, NFL Network, coming up at 11 o'clock. Willie's first installment of his brackets at 11:30. You're not going to have seeds, right? You're just going to have the teams in?
Yeah, it's more of the bubble picture right now.
Okay.
We'll start getting into seeds as we go forward here.
Okay, so that's coming up at 11:30. Alan Bell will join us in the third hour in studio, starting at 12:15. Elliot Freeman, his weekly chat with us at 1 o'clock as we inch a little bit closer to the trading deadline.
Haven't seen anything today.
No, it's been considering. I was watching the Canucks game against Minnesota last night. What a gag job by them. Their debut of Toffoli. They lost at home to Minnesota in a shootout.
Minnesota's
scored,
hanging around.
Didn't they score like a second to go?
Minnesota just keeps hanging around.
I feel like there are a couple teams that are just hanging around at the moment.
I happened to catch some of the discussion on the NHL Network last night. They were talking a lot about Minnesota. What's Bill Guerin going to do? He's already traded Jason Zucker. And there's a lot of speculation about guys we brought up on the show yesterday, Matt Dumba and Jonas Brodin. Because it would be interesting in those guys if they put them on the block. And remember, Predators play the Wild 3 times between now and the end of the season.
And they are separated by 2 points right now.
So if Minnesota decides they're going for it, Craig Leopold says, Bill, I know you might be thinking long term, but I really want to make the playoffs. I don't want you to trade these guys. That's a little different than let's go to the other end of the extreme where they trade Dumba and Brodin. That their decor looks a lot different if that's the case.
I think they've already made it clear they're going to kind of, I don't want to say clear the deck, but they're going to, I don't think that was it.
I feel like they're tweaking.
They've been doing more than tweaking. I've got to be honest, what I watched last night, Kevin Fiala looked good.
He had a goal.
I was watching last night.
He's got 15 now.
He was all over the place, especially in overtime. He had a couple really good looks. But look at the standings right now. St. Louis and Dallas with 76 points. Colorado with 75. So 1 through 3 in the Central separated by a point. 1 through 3 in the Pacific, separated by a point. Edmonton was 71.
What's 1 through 5?
Vancouver and Vegas was 70. The two wild card teams are Calgary and Arizona, 68. So 1 through 5 is separated by 3 points.
There you go. That's the amazing thing. And that, I think, to a degree, works into the Predators' favor because there's a lot of games within the division happening still. So those teams are going to jockey.
Well, they got a nice favor from Dallas last night. Dallas beat the Coyotes.
That was big.
I mean, yeah.
Edmonton lost. Edmonton scrapped their way to a point. I mean, Edmonton was missing a lot of key guys. Mm-hmm. Edmonton's fighting to tread water right now with a lot of guys out.
I think the thing that I'm looking for with this wild card race, if you look at Calgary, Arizona, Winnipeg, Nashville, and Minnesota, none of those teams have really decided, you know what? All right, we're going to stand out. Now, the Predators had a three-game winning streak and a nice little run, but they're in their last 10, they're 6-4-0. You have Calgary 5-5-0, Arizona 4-4-2. I'm waiting for that one or two teams to separate from the pact, and it just hasn't happened yet. And I don't know if it's going to. I mean, it could come down to the wire like we've been talking about over the last few days. But just right now it's a jumbled mess, and you don't have a team that has really turned it on and gone to another level and pulled away from the pack in that wild card race.
Well, but for all the sellers, that's great news.
Sure.
They want this exact jumbled mess in the standings, because that's going to drive up the price. I mean, these teams all feel like they're in it, and they need to make a move or moves. And so that's going to drive up the price.
Well, I think that's why a general manager like David Poile is in such a tough position right now, that he knows he has some assets that he could get something for, but does he want to do it? Because he's very much in a playoff race.
You guys talked about a little bit about the trading deadline last night. Smashville Live.
Yeah, we did. And look, I don't envy those guys of the position that, you know, they're in. And Craig Smith, Austin Watson, they were the guests. And obviously we know Craig's contract situation as an unrestricted free agent at year's end. So that's a type of player you always look to. But Austin Watson's another one, even though he just signed a contract extension. You know, he basically said, and I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, you get nervous this time of year because you don't know, you know, if the guy next to you is going to be there. You don't know if you're going to be there. And there's a human element to it that I think sometimes people lose sight of you're affecting families. It's a business. Everybody knows what they signed up for, but it's still tough. It doesn't make it. Mikael Granlund is a prime example of just how tough it is. He was acquired on, you know, when his baby was being born, comes here, has to move to a different city, and the transition was difficult for him. So it's, you know, you're trying to do what's best for your team, but you also have to remember that you have lives other than the player being affected as well.
We'll come back, kick off the second hour with Bucky Brooks from NFL Network. We do that next.